Facing challenges and overcoming setbacks is part of doing business. Whether you have the expertise to survive them or not could mean the difference between success or failure. Welcome to We Are Women, featuring revealing conversations that provide invaluable insights into the success secrets of female masterminds. A must-listen for every entrepreneurial woman. Now here's your host, Janine Vosper.
Hi, it's Janine Vosper again, and welcome to this episode of the We Are Women podcast. Today I have the incredible, amazing Justine Martin. Now I want to read this because it's so close to my beliefs. And Justine says, resilience means having the capacity to recover quickly from difficulties and show toughness. This definition has been the cornerstone of Justine's extraordinary journey over the last decade, a journey no one could fathom, but in Justine's words, this journey has changed her for the better. Justine uses her learned experiences to overcome adversities and to help gain others their own resilience. In 2011, she was diagnosed with multiple sclerosis, underwent three heart surgeries, and then had three primary cancers at once. We're going to unpack a lot of this, Justine.
There's a lot there.
It does. She was told that she would never work again by medical professionals. Oh, I love it when medical professionals tell you you can't do something. That's 100%. But there was never an option for her. Justine catapulted herself into the world of business. She not only changed her life, but gave it purpose and direction, but also inspired others around her with her story. After learning how to paint and using art therapy, she became a multi-award-winning artist and found the strength and determination to take control of her financial future. She now owns and runs 7 businesses. List them here. Just Art, Resilience Mindset, Van Gogh Decals, Morphus Publishing, Team Fingerprint, Geelong Residential Cleaners, and Justine Martin Speaker. And that's all probably, you know, on a Monday, I can imagine, Justine. And all being under the umbrella of Justine Martin Corporation. In 2021 to 24, Justine was nominated for 47 National Business Awards and won 17 in various categories, such as Coach of the Year, Creative Artist of the Year, International Speaker, Coaches Judge Ward, Geelong Business Leader of the Year 23-24, Momentum Empowerment Woman of the Year, Silver 2024 Women Changing the World Disability Leader. And how I connected with Justine was seeing that she was the 2024 Top 10 Voices International Women's Business Club. And so you can understand why I wanted to have this conversation with Justine. She is an award-winning resilience and transformation coach, consultant, international keynote speaker, multi-award-winning professional artist, teacher, Amazon best-selling author, publisher, mentor, affiliate, volunteer for cancer survivors, MS warrior, DV survivor, disabled mum of 2, grandmother of 7, and a queen of resilience. So, Justine, welcome. I'm exhausted.
I don't think we need to talk anymore.
No. it covers that. There is so much in there. And I'm looking at for those that are listening, I apologize. For those that are watching, I'm looking at the image of the turtle in your background. Is that your art?
Yeah, that was one of my earlier ones. That's actually got a story to it. And what you won't be able to see properly, but I will explain it, is that I see myself as a turtle, so to speak. So a turtle has a really tough outer shell which protects their inner core. And for a long time, I was in survival mode. And throughout my life, I've had a lot of traumatic experiences from childhood through. And so I had this tough shell which protected that inner sanctuary inside. And so that the turtle, generally turtles go forwards. You very rarely see a turtle swimming backwards. They don't really have that capacity. And so I see myself as always going forwards, not bouncing back into when people talk about resilience, it's like, oh, bouncing back. But you actually, for me, I've bounced forward from every adversity that I face. So, you know, going forward. In the water and the coral down the bottom, there's actually pieces of jigsaw puzzles.
Okay.
Because to me, like with having MS with no cure, cancer, no cure, I've got lipedema, which has got no cure. There's missing pieces of the puzzles. And they're floating around in the ocean out there. So that's the meaning behind that picture.
That's a beautiful story of how you can create something really special that defines that meaning, so much meaning to you. I love it. You know, that it's so... You know, you see a lot of art, but to have the purposeful and for have it to be sitting here behind you as we're doing the interview, I think that is really
special. I do two different types of art, Janine. So I do, like I call it disposable art, where, you know, people are decorating a room and they want a pretty picture to put on the wall. And then when they redecorate, they'll change the pretty pictures. And I do create lots of animals, big, bright, animals for that purpose and bright colorful paintings. But then I have my serious art that does have meaning behind it, and I've won quite a lot of awards with that serious art and the story behind. So there's one particular picture that's all just millions of dots stippled, and it's myself, it's a self-portrait, and in my hair I've written the words of all the hidden symptoms and that of MS. So this one was done quite some time ago, before the cancers actually. So all the hidden symptoms of MS. And then I asked on Facebook if everyone could describe me in one word. And I thought they'd come up with about, you know, maybe 10 or 12 words. And they came up with 119 different words about me. And so the other side of my hair is all the words that everyone described me as. And so that piece is called More Than Is Seen. And that's pretty much my key message, Janine, is that there is more than is seen, and being Instagram perfect, or, you know, we put so much pressure on living our lives being perfect to the outside world, but I'm all about authenticity and living to your best life, your life, and not comparing to someone else's life.
That's such a deep subject, and I really want to get into that, because the vision and the expectations that we have of ourselves are usually dependent on a judgment that we make in a comparison to someone else, isn't it?
Yeah.
And we don't know, as you said, you don't know the background story for people. And until we can be really honest with that within ourselves, then we can't be honest with the outside world either. I've just been editing some videos of me, and when I smile, I have a crooked smile. And it goes up on my
throat.
Yeah, I know. And you put lippy on and it really makes it more obvious. And I'm editing all these videos going, oh, and I just take off the front and back, and they're 1 minute business bites. But it's just that, well, it's me. That's it. That's me.
Yeah, and I think, you know, the media has played a really bad role in all of this. You know, there's not one magazine cover that you can pick up and have a look at that hasn't been photoshopped, hasn't got a filter over it, hasn't, you know, they've done a bit of airbrushing here and there on it, which gives a false sense out to the broader community of the expectation of what they think that we should look like. I mean, if you follow me on socials, I'll quite often be in my jammies sitting on the studio floor painting up a storm, or, you know, I'll be in a hospital bed, or I'm having treatment, or I'm sitting at the doctor's and I'm live streaming, and some days I look terrible. Yeah. And it's like, well, do I worry about what I'm looking like or how I'm looking like in that video, or is it far more important to get the message out? And it's far more important to be authentic and get that message out. So
when you had the diagnosed with MS, that was, I've had some friends that have it and or have had it over time, or always have it, but it's not always.
It's always with us. There's no cure for MS.
Yeah.
It's depending on which type of MS that you actually got or have, depends on whether you're going to be seeing symptoms that they're experiencing, or if they've got secondary progressive or primary progressive, those symptoms never go away.
And what are the symptoms? How did you
So for me, it was my vision went funny. That's my little puppy dog in the background. So she's my constant companion. I got empty nest syndrome, so I got a dog. So for me, my vision went blurry, and I went to the doctors, and it had been blurry about, I don't know, 8 years prior to that. And I thought it was the mascara that I was wearing in the previous occasion. But when it went blurry again, I wasn't wearing mascara. So I'm like, well, I'm not having an allergic reaction. I wonder what this is. And I'd had an MRI about 12 months earlier, or maybe a bit longer actually, which showed a cyst behind my right eye, which had never really been checked on. And within 24 hours, I was sitting in a neurosurgeon's office with the contemplation that, you know, they were going to cut this cyst out and going to have brain surgery. And I asked then if it was MS, because we have a very strong family history of MS.
Okay.
But when we grew up, we were always told by my mum's medical practitioners that we would never get MS. Don't worry about it. You won't get it. It's not hereditary. What they failed to say to us was that there's a genetic predisposition if all the environmental factors are in place.
Right.
My brother hasn't got it, but I got it. And so then, yeah, my vision went funny. I lost the ability to count. I couldn't multitask. I couldn't raise my left arm any higher than mid-range. It just wouldn't move. So there was a series of things that were happening, and because it was gradual over a few months, I hadn't really put the pieces together. And then when I lost the ability to function at work, and all I wanted to do was sleep, I pretty much knew. And I had three MRIs under a 6 month period, and each one was showing more and more white spots. And then they gave me a lumbar puncture when my bladder went. And so a lot of the symptoms for me are invisible to the outside world. I look normal the majority of the time, whatever normal is. And there's a lot going on in the central nervous system. I do have a wheelchair that I've had to use in the past when I have a reflare, and I do have a walking stick and a walking wheelie walker as well, depending on what my legs are doing. Sometimes my legs shoot out electricity, and which prevents me from walking with a normal gait. So there's a lot there with the MS. But every single person is different. So how I'm affected will be similar to the next person, but it all depends on where the MS has attacked the central nervous system and those lesions in the brain.
Right. Okay. Thank you for explaining that. And wow, it's one of those things I know with the friends that have got it. It's a tough gig.
Well, that's why last year I brought out a book called Whispers of Resilience, Our Stories of Multiple Sclerosis. And if you're watching on the video, here it is. It's 26 stories of people around Australia that all have MS. So we all have this common bond together, but every single story is totally different. Obviously by where their lesions are and the method of treatment that they've actually been on. And so most people like you, Janine, know of MS but don't know how it affects the individual. And, I mean, MS Australia has done a wonderful job in the campaign of raising awareness of MS, but not actually what MS is.
No, that's a really good point, because it really not aware of it. And was that the start of with the art? Was it something, oh, I've always done this, or it was, I'm just,
no.
No, that's cool. So, the create, were you creative though, Justine?
I'm from a very arty farty family, and
yeah.
Back in, I don't know if you remember, but back in the early 90s, the hobby ceramics craze was out.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah. Used to go to studios and create hobby ceramics. So I did that.
I did that too.
Yeah, well, I did it to the point that I had won lots of awards with it, and I was supplying 5 shops.
Right.
With my work.
And I just told you there, are you the type of person that goes, I'm going to do this, and then all of a sudden everything takes over and then you're winning things and like this overachiever? I'm just sensing that in
there. And there's a reason for that as well that I found out years later about why I'm an overachiever, and I'll explain that to you. But with the hobby ceramics, so I'd done a little bit, but I always wanted to learn how to paint properly. In high school, I chose the music path rather than the art side of it, visual art. And my music career stopped when my mum's MS got so bad that I had to leave uni, and I was studying to be a classical composer and conductor. And I thought I'd always go back to it. And I went home and I looked after her. I taught piano for about 10 years, but then stopped doing that as well. So when I was diagnosed with the MS and I had to stop work because I was sleeping most of the day and I couldn't count how to give change back to a customer, and I was a program director for Jenny Craig, and so seeing lots of clients, and I couldn't write what they were saying and listen, that had gone from my brain, and I couldn't multitask anymore like men can't. And so I've had a female brain and now I've got a man brain, so to speak. So I can sympathize with them and tell them, I couldn't even tell the time or work it out, and I was sleeping through doctor's appointments and everything. It was, and forgetting to go and pick up my daughter from school and stuff like that. So my neurologist actually said to me 2 things. He said, you can't work anymore, and you're going to have to find a hobby because you're going to have a lot of time on your hands. So for your mental health, you're going to have to find a hobby. So it wasn't a simple case of, oh, well, I want to learn how to paint and walk straight through that art studio door. I had major crippling anxiety, and I'd go to art classes every week, which I paid for, but I sat outside and cried in the car and drove home until after about the fourth month, around that period of time, I got really angry at myself and thought, what's the worst thing that could happen by walking through that door? I was so worried that people were going to judge me because now I was disabled and my life had just crumbled around me. In the blink of an eye, everything changed forever. And I walked into that studio, which I might add my girlfriend was running, so it wasn't as if it was a room full of total strangers. But anxiety will do that to you, and went in there and took to it like a duck to water. And when I stopped work, I'd lost the ability to earn my own money. I'd lost the ability of what my purpose in life was going to be. How was I going to provide for my children? When my partner earned too much money for me to get Centrelink, but our bills went up, our income dropped by $60,000, which was a lot of money back then. And I felt like I was a burden to absolutely everyone. And then 6 months after starting to paint, I sold my first piece for $300.
How exciting.
Oh, it felt like 3 million.
Yeah, that it's
3 million it did to me. And from there, it wasn't, oh, I can still make money. I actually realized back then that my purpose was to make other people smile by looking at my artwork. And that gave me so much joy that I was still contributing in a cultural way into society. But then I had that money. I was with a narcissist at the time, and he was controlling every cent in and out of the bank account. And so all of a sudden he was $300. And you know what I spent that $300 on?
What?
More art supplies.
Oh, I was going to say paint supplies.
Yeah, more art supplies.
And that's what you do when you find your purpose, you find something that you enjoy doing, and usually something you're good at, is you continue to invest in yourself.
Exactly, 100%. But a lot of people don't do that. And they then don't have that belief back into themselves. So from that, you know, first painting that I sold, I started entering lots of exhibitions because I knew I had a marketing background from lots of jobs and businesses that I'd owned in the past that I needed to build a brand. And that's when I registered Just Art. And that brand started by entering lots of exhibitions, but also having a little market stall at the local markets and then making a range of greeting cards from there. And so those greeting cards had all my details on the back. So effectively people were just buying my business card. And then I got commission work from there. And it's just kind of, it started off as that little snowball. And now like it's an avalanche.
That's fantastic. And through that, because as you said, you know, you sat outside, you didn't want, you had fear going in on how you would be judged. So the art then and the success, is that part of this building resilience or is that something that was always in you?
I teach strategies on how to build resilience in your life, and having a hobby is one of them. So art may not be everyone's cup of tea, but being creative in some form, and you can be creative by maybe you're a gardener and building a vegetable garden or having lots of plants around is another form of creativity. There's so much out there. Learn a musical instrument. At the moment I'm back learning the drums, which I haven't done since 1987. and my problem is that I pick a hobby that I then make lots of money out of it. So,
well, there you go. These drums could go anywhere then.
That's what someone else said to me. Oh, I can see you touring in an international band. I'm like, no, let's not get carried away. But you asked before, Janine, about me being a high achiever in things. So that actually, I've done a lot of therapy on myself, particularly in the last 12 years. And I grew up in what I thought was a normal childhood, but when I put myself into therapy, I found out that no, that wasn't normal. And my mum, through her own circumstances, was a narcissist. And my brother could do no wrong. And so he was that golden child, and I could never do anything right. And there's a really good book called Will I Ever Be Good Enough? Healing the Daughters of Narcissistic Mothers. And my therapist recommended that I read that. And my mum passed away when I was 26. I had a 7-week-old daughter and she was 49. And she passed away from complications from MS. So you can't actually die from MS, but you can die from complications that it does to your body. And so I never got to have it out with my mum, so to speak, in her narcissistic ways that this book teaches you how to do it. But it did answer a lot of questions. And daughters of narcissistic mothers will head two ways. So they'll either go down the path of addiction, so drug, alcohol, sex addiction, or they'll go down the path of being an overachiever. So you can kind of pick which path I went down.
and it's probably the more the healthier one if you're going to do it. Although,
mentally the strain that puts on you, and you always feel that you're not good enough.
Yeah. And look, and depending on people's beliefs, but the listeners will know that then we talk about what dis-ease we can bring into the body when we're not happy with who we are and we're never good enough, or we're, you know, bringing ourselves down it constantly. So then the body responds physically to that.
That's 100%. Yes, 100%. And you know, on a cellular level, everything. So I still enter lots of awards.
I can see that.
Well, it's actually more than that. And when you read out the bio, I'm like, oh no, I've got another 5 nominations that came in yesterday for the Oz Mumpreneur Awards. Okay. And I've just entered the Australian Australian Women's Business Champion Awards as well. So I'm waiting to find out if I've gotten in those. And the finals for another lot of awards are in July. So we're always entering awards. And why we do that, and I say we because there's a whole team behind me now, why we do that is to raise awareness about pushing through the adversity that you're facing. And it's far more than just me winning another trophy to go on the in the pool room that I need new pool room. So it's far bigger than that. It's to show, you know, that my story is someone else's survival guide. And if they can see what I'm doing and what I'm still achieving despite everything that's gone wrong, it gives them hope.
Yes, and swimming forward rather than
treading water.
Yeah, and that's dangerous as well because you can only do that for so long.
That's right.
Because you don't reach the other side.
So this all comes back to being authentic in your own life.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I don't have the time or the energy to be something or someone else. I mean, what you see talking to me now is me.
Mm.
100% of the time. The way I am on stage talking to a couple of thousand people is how I'm talking to, you know, my friends that are sitting across from the dinner table from me. So all my kids, all my grandchildren, although sometimes I'm Miss Cranky.
I was going to say, no, I don't agree that with grandchildren. It's a different role.
Oh, no, don't worry. I'm quite stern with them. I'm stern with them as well. And I have them. I have four of them. They come and stay one night a fortnight with me. They've got their own room here. And I'm a hands-on nanny definitely with those. So, you know, there is authority with them as well and boundaries, what they can and can't do when they come to Nan's house, and they know that, and they're all well-behaved when they're here. So they know they can't get away with too much. But, you know, that is a different love for grandchildren than what it is for your own. It's so much deeper without the stress. You know, your kids all over again because they look like your kids, but the stress isn't there.
I totally agree. I've got five grandchildren. And my definition of that is I love my children. I mean, it came with the part of the rules that you have to, but I'm in love with my grandchildren.
Yes.
You know, it's a different space. Yes. And I am still, there's boundaries and rules, and it's really interesting, isn't it? Within lives, how when people know that there's boundaries and rules, that they adhere to them. It's this, and that was something I did want to touch on with resilience as well, because I am noticing that people I'm working with or that they're 30-something, 20-something children are really struggling in this world now, more so than I've ever noticed before. And I was having a conversation with someone I was walking with this morning, and we were talking about that lack of resilience to overcome the you know, what it is, or just to move forward through it. So not necessarily overcome things, but recognize, okay, that's it, that's happening. And then
I think technology's got a lot to do with that.
Mm.
I don't mean just TVs. Mm. I mean, you have a look around on all the appliances and the convenience of everything that we have nowadays. We didn't have that when we were growing up.
Mm.
So we learned about imagination. We learned outside on outside play, getting dirty, using our minds to create games and forts out in the backyard or play forts inside. We didn't sit with an electronic piece of equipment in front of us.
We took risks as well, Justine.
Because at school, we were allowed to climb on a monkey bar.
Mm.
The playgrounds were different. We hurt ourselves. We got back up when we hurt ourselves.
There was a few broken spoons in our yard as well, in our house. And we got on the back of a truck. This is what, and you grew up on a farm, and we were talking about this earlier that my son.
Well, I grew up in town. I grew up in town, actually. And I had a lot of friends that had farms. So, you know, I can remember one particular weekend I went out and helped a girlfriend. We would have been about year eight. and helped her dad tag and mark 500 lambs. They were covered head to toe in blood.
Yeah.
And that was just something that you did there. And like, I grew up in a small country town. The only time my mum would get out of bed and drive my brother and I to school was when it was raining, because she knew that if we got to school wet, the school would call us, call her to come and pick us up. We walked to school in the snow. We walked to school in every condition. We walked home in the rain because mum knew that when we got home, we'd get changed, so she wouldn't come out in the rain and get us. So that builds resilience. But a question for you, Janine, is resilience something that we learn, or is it something that we're born with?
For me, I think it's a bit of both. I haven't had the challenges I was reading from your bio. I mean, I haven't had those challenges. I did grow up with an alcoholic father, but not an abusive man. It was a bit of a different space. But from that experience, my sister has a different experience of that than what I did. And that's where I'm seeing it's within yourself. And she has younger than me, and she has had a broken heart and had a heart attack. And the doctor actually said it's a broken heart, which I thought was very forward thinking of him to do that. So she takes things on differently than I take things on.
Yeah, and the same with my brother as well. I mean, my brother's quite resilient. I mean, he obviously hasn't been through what I have medically, but he has in other situations as well. But so when I say to, you know, people, oh, that question, ask them, is it something we learn, or is it something we're born with? It is both, because there are different types of resilience as well. So to give you an indication, no one tells us that we can't walk. It's something that is ingrained into our genetics, into that DNA, in that cellular thing, the evolution. So we teach ourselves to crawl, but that's not something that happens overnight. You know, you start rocking and then you take that one little movement forward, and then the next thing, and then you're rocking more and you're doing it. Walking's the same. We couch surf for a long period of time until we're game enough to let go, and then we'll take a step and we fall down, but then we get back up. Isn't that building resilience? Isn't that being resilient? And then we take another step until we're actually doing it. Because no one's told us we can't. What happens as an adult, by the time we get to adulthood, and generally it happens through primary school, and I experience this a lot with people that come in and say that they can't paint. They're not artistic. They can't paint. They can't draw. And I'll call bullshit on it, because it'll be someone has told them in their childhood, generally back in the day, a teacher that has made a comment that, you know, Johnny or Mary is not a very good artist. Well, they are still an artist. That then all of a sudden they get this false belief about themselves and that they can't do it. You know, I had one lady come in and say, I can't even draw a straight line. I'm like, but that's a false belief on you. You can do that. My mum, as much as a narcissist as what she was, she used to say to us, my brother and I, all the time, there's no such word as can't. Just work out how. Work out can. And with everything that I've experienced and I've been through, I've had to learn how to adapt and modify. How to learn things nowadays is different to what I used to do. So it doesn't mean that I can't do that anymore. Yes, it takes twice, three, four, five, six times the amount of time, but I can still do it just in a different way. So adapting and modifying is a way to build resilience. You can't build resilience by yourself. Resilience is something that you need to have the ability and the strength to ask for help. And asking for help is always a sign of strength. Don't see it as a sign of weakness, because it's not. And people will see it as failure. Oh, I've got to ask for help. I've failed. No, you're actually stepping up and you're admitting that you need the help, and that will help build resilience as well.
And that thinking comes back to what you said right at the beginning, you know, looking at social media and seeing what the perfect world is. And well,
that's right.
They can do it. And that's one of the things I often say with people, you know, when I start working with them. I like working with people when they're first starting out, because I just want to have a conversation and tell you what you don't listen to all the shoulds and what is going to work for you. Because, you know, and because that people are seeing everyone else doing all these multi-level things. I mean, you've looked at yours, but then you see how long you've been in business and how long you've been doing things. And it's not in a day.
No. And like, I registered Just Art in 2013, but when I get up and talk, I talk about two lives. I'm one person with two lives. I have a life that started on the 14th of March 2011, and I have the life that was before that date up to the 13th of March 2011. And I had a lot of business experience prior to that. But I listened to one person's false belief on me. When he said that I couldn't work anymore, what he should have said to me was, you can't work in your chosen profession anymore.
Mm.
And worded it differently to me.
Mm.
But when he said that I couldn't work anymore, I took that as a blanket. I'm never going to be able to work again. What am I going to do for the rest of my life? And I went down that rabbit hole.
Right.
And it was dark and it was bleak and I had suicidal thoughts. And it took a good couple of years to get out of that and to start that journey of crawling myself out of that hole and asking for help and putting myself in therapy and getting my head right in order to then start moving forward. And every adversity that I have faced, something good has come out of it.
Mm.
The MS brought the art business into play. Having three primary cancers, two blood conditions, and the MS all at the same time brought resilience mindset, because everyone wanted to know what my story was.
Right.
Why was I so positive? What were my secrets?
Mm.
And I didn't know. I had no idea, Janine. I had to go and work with someone to find out what made me tick.
Interesting.
How did I have this resilience? I didn't even know about the word resilience until 2019. No idea what it was.
That's really interesting, isn't it? How was that awareness then of going, oh, that's what it is?
I actually worked, again, I seek out mentors and business coaches, because
mm-hmm.
Every successful business person has a coach or a mentor. And you've got to make sure that you don't outgrow them and stay with them. If you're outgrowing them, you've got to find the next level up and continue finding the next level up on someone to bring you up to their level. And so I was working with this woman, and she goes, "You're the queen of resilience." And I'm like, "What is this?" And then COVID hit, and then all of a sudden, we branded the Queen of Resilience, and then all of a sudden there was resilience everywhere, absolutely everywhere, and it was the buzzword, and it still is the buzzword. So we're looking at rebranding. Well, we are rebranding from the Queen of Resilience. I mean, I'll still have that tagline, but we're bringing out another program, and so stay tuned. That's launching at the end of the year, and that's really, really exciting for that as well. But yeah, I had no idea what resilience actually meant. And because it had become it's my normal, my norm. So I didn't realize there was actually a tag or a name for it.
Oh, that's it. And then, so the cancers come along at the same time as the MS.
Yeah. Yeah, so what happened was...
Thank you very much. I'm just looking up to the ceiling, thanking the universe, you know.
Yeah, so 2011 I got diagnosed with the MS, 2013, 14, and they put me on disease modifying therapy drugs to slow down the progression of the MS, which changes your whole immune system.
Right, yeah.
Okay? A little bit like the vaccines have done, okay, to people. So then 2013, 14 and 15 I underwent heart surgeries. My resting heart rate was 217 beats a minute, and then I was missing heart beats on the third surgery. So one in every five heartbeats wasn't there, which is a problem. So the 6 feet was really, really strong, and that can cause clots through the body and that as well. Then I had that fixed and I was feeling pretty good. And then I started going purple with a condition called Lividia reticularis. And that happened in Tasmania when I was competing in Olympic weightlifting in the Australian Masters National Championships with able-bodied people as a disabled person, as you do, because that was a hobby.
Miss Overachiever, I'm just not going to do it, but I'm going to compete in the World Masters Games or the Australian Masters.
Was the Masters Pacific Rim and Oceania Championships as well. So, you know, as you do. So I was down there and I was going purple. It was actually the colour of my jumper, if you're watching. That's what colour my pants were going. And then it started happening with my nose, my ears, my chin, my feet. And I went to a doctor and said to her about it. And she said, don't worry about it. Come back in 4 months if it's still happening. And something didn't sit right with me. I'm like, why all of a sudden has this changed?
Hadn't been to Willy Wonka's factory. So
no, I wasn't. Yeah. I wasn't the blueberry from. My son actually, you know, made a bit of a joke that mum was from The Walking Dead. I was turning into a zombie. And it was happening at about 12 degrees. So when the weather was down about 12 degrees, and then it started happening at 19 degrees. And my neurologist, or one of the doctors actually said to me, make sure you stay warm because it'll cause necrosis and you'll have bits drop off. And I'm like, what?
Don't worry about it for 4 months. It's okay.
I live in Victoria. It's cold. How do you keep your nose warm? So anyway, that then put me on a trajectory of trying to find out why I had Lividia. And there's three basic things that can cause it, which is lupus, rheumatoid arthritis, and lymphoma. And so I went to a rheumatologist and he ruled out lupus and rheumatoid arthritis and said, look, you better go and have to a dermatologist just to confirm and have a biopsy done that it is Lividia. And I was booked into them the following week anyway. So I had all these medical specialist appointments booked in. And thanks to my neurologist and a new GP wasn't happy with me turning purple, and because you just don't turn purple for no reason.
I just can't believe the doctor said, just see me in 4 months, it'll be fine.
So I went off to the dermatologist the week later expecting to have a biopsy done on the Lividia, and she took one look at my feet and went, oh, it's definitely Lividia, I don't need to do a biopsy. And I'm like, oh, and I'm going to swear again. I'm like, shit, I've got lymphoma. I was just sitting there starting to spin out going, oh, my God, I've got lymphoma. And then I remember her saying to me, when was the last time you had a skin check done? I said, oh, well, you know, my former GP did one a few years ago. She goes, well, we're here now. You haven't got your gear on. Let's do a mole map and let's do a skin check. And I'm like, all right. And I'm lying there, she's looking at him, spinning out, you know, I've got lymphoma. And she goes, look, I'm not happy with the mole on your leg. She did lots of photos of it. And she goes, we'll just do a little biopsy. And then she goes, sit up. And I sat up. And the next thing, she's got this dry ice, the liquid nitrogen, and she wanted to burn one off my cheek here and one off on my forehead. I'm like, what, you're going to do that now? She goes, yeah, no time like the present. So I'm getting, you know, dry iced, and she cut this little bit off my leg, which is a mole that was about 3 millimeters in size. So it was not big at all. And she said, look, don't worry about it. It'll take about 10 days for the results. And I wasn't worried about it. I was more worried that I had lymphoma.
Yeah.
And I got out to the car and did a live stream saying, I've just had a mole removed and, you know, go and have your skin checks done, blah, blah, blah. Anyway, the next day I got a phone call from her nurse, and the poor nurse, I was walking through a shopping center at the time, and she goes, oh, I'm just ringing to tell you that you've got melanoma. And I'm not going to say the swear word that I actually said then. And I'm like, no, I don't. I've got lymphoma. I don't have melanoma. You've got it wrong. And she's like, oh, no, I'm sorry to tell you that, no, you do have melanoma, and you're going to have to come back in and have more of your leg cut out to contain it. And I'm like, are you Serious?
Yeah.
And anyway, I got straight into my GP that afternoon, and I'm like, Mark, is this why I'm going purple? Because I thought, oh, you know, now I finally got an answer. And he's like, no, Justine, this is a separate issue. This is probably more to do with your MS and your weakened immune system. And I'm like, are you serious? So then I went to the hematologist. I went back and had a big chunk of my leg cut out, then went to the hematologist, and she read through absolutely everything that has gone wrong. And there's two full A4 pages of stuff that I have been through. And so you've only getting just a drop. And I said, oh, it hasn't got on there that I've got melanoma. And she said, when did you have that? I said, oh, last week. So then I went on a series of, I had to have bone marrow biopsies, PET scans, CAT scans, to find out about the lymphoma. And then I lost the ability to hold a paintbrush.
No, that would have been telling.
I could not bend my fingers properly, couldn't hold anything, and I couldn't bend my toes either, and I had decreased lung capacity. And then by the December, they diagnosed me with another blood condition called mixed cryoglobulinemia. So my bone marrow was making too many cryoglobulins, which is a protein in the blood, and I was dying. So there was so much inflammation. The large blood vessels around all my internal organs were becoming so inflamed and so big that they were choking off everything. So I couldn't eat properly, couldn't swallow properly, couldn't breathe properly, and I was in a real mess. And then so that Christmas I thought was going to be my last Christmas in 2016. And then, which I didn't really think of at the time, it wasn't until New Year's Eve that it really started to hit me that I'm not going to see another New Year's Eve. What are my kids going to do? And then January 2017, I got another phone call. So it was all
Stop not wanting to open the, answer the phone.
Especially the private numbers.
Yeah.
And it was my hematologist that rang me and said, your results are back from our testing. You've got small lymphocytic lymphoma, and you also have chronic lymphocytic leukemia. So I had three, although they'd cut out the melanoma by that stage, I effectively in 2016 had three primary cancers, two blood conditions, and the MS all at the same time. And then it wasn't a simple case of, well, let's put you on chemo, because I was still on disease modifying therapy drugs from the MS. So I then had to do a chemical flush over 3 weeks of taking this vial syrup thing, and then wait another week. And then by me being on the MS drugs, and because that has compromised my immune system so much, and then putting me on chemo, that would have instantly killed me. Mm. So it would have shocked my immune system way too much, and I would have been neutropenic instantly. And then, yeah, so the risk of infection and then dying from those infections was huge. So I had to wait for it. So it wasn't as simple case as, oh, well, you've got cancer, you've got all these, we're starting you on chemo this afternoon or tomorrow. That didn't happen. So there was a lot of think time in that period of time. But then I came through that, and then 2018, I was diagnosed with a condition called lipedema. Now, I don't know if you've heard of Janine lipedema, but 11% of all your female listeners will probably have it. And it's a genetic condition that is also known as painful fat syndrome. And so my legs look like billiard table legs. And it's a resistance to weight loss. And so for many, many years, you know, I'd go into the doctor trying to lose weight and be told you need to go on a diet, you need to exercise more, you're just obese. And it's not obesity, it's a different type of fat. So it's actually a nodular fibrous fat. And that was diagnosed in 2018. And I've just recently, last weekend, went to the Lipedema Australian Conference and trying to raise awareness of what lipedema actually is.
That's interesting that the statistics would be that high. So identifying the symptoms, it's more how the legs look, is that?
Yeah, so it's in your legs and your arms, and there's other contributing factors like so resistance to the weight loss. You can feel nodules under the surface of your skin, where the majority of us are all hypermobile, so we can extend our joints far further than what they're meant to go back. That's another symptom of it. You can have with it as well histamine intolerances to food, so lots of allergies, migraines, asthmatic, so a weakened immune system from it as well. And it's something that we're born with, and it'll change with hormones, particularly with women when we're starting getting our periods. So it affects more, it's far more a woman's disease than a man's disease as well. But in saying that, some men are affected by it. They still don't know much about it at all. It is something that is relatively newly diagnosed. But to give you an indication, in Australia, there will be 1.2 million women with it.
Goodness me.
Okay.
And most of them being undiagnosed.
Yeah. So once you realize what it looks like, you'll spot it everywhere. Right. And so we have this banding around the bottom of the ankle. So people confuse it with lymphedema. Lymphedema is different to lipedema. Lymphedema, you swell with fluid, and you can have one limb that just swells, or you can have both limbs. Lipedema generally affects the legs first, and then I've got it in my arms, my belly, in between my shoulder blades. My skin is velvet like, so I get told, oh, you know, you've got nice soft velvety skin.
You definitely don't get ever told that, so
and so there's the
yeah,
we can be anorexic and still have fat legs. We can lose all the fat from our torso.
Yeah.
Which I have done, and I've had bone ribs extruding out and my hips, and when I've gone to sit down, my tailbone hurts because there's no padding left there, yet I still have a fat bum, or I still have a large bum, and I have these large legs.
Interesting.
And the arms as well. So this part of the arm, so that there, I don't know if you can see, and for those that are watching, I'm pinching around about 2 inches of this fibrous fat in my arm. And so I've weightlifted for the majority of my adult life, and competed in, you know, tug of war, and I was in the gym 7 days a week. I lived with PT for a long period of time. We had our own commercial equipment in a gym and training twice a day, and I never got a bodybuilding body. It just never happened. And now I know the reason why, and it was never going to happen.
So what is it called? Because I'm thinking
it's called lipedema. So it's lipedema.
Okay. And yeah, I can recognize those symptoms on some friends. You know, they'll talk about when they're waving goodbye to someone, then their arms keep waving long.
Yeah,
up.
And the more that we get in the arms, the more the skin starts to really hang and tear. Yeah. The fibers tear. I've never been able to run. It's painful for me to run. Even in high school, I couldn't run because the fibers in the fat were tearing the whole time.
Interesting. Yeah. Well, I'm sitting here thankful of my thin legs and thin arms. And
And
oh my gosh.
That's another thing, you know, I've had to get my head around.
Wow. Yeah.
And about being authentic in the body that you're in. So I did lose weight. I was 46 kilos heavier. And it took me 445 weeks to lose 46 kilos.
Wow.
So that's been resilient.
Yeah, that is absolutely.
But I also changed my whole lifestyle in doing that.
You motivate me, Justine. You know, there's I'm motivated anyway, but there's certain things where you just go, oh, stuff it, you know. But you motivate me, and I'm sure that you motivate others and inspire others. And I can see.
I leave you on one quote, one of my quotes.
Yes.
All right. Time is the most precious commodity on the planet. You can't buy it, sell it, reuse it, borrow it, or steal it. So be careful on what you spend it on and who you spend it on. Yeah. And that's my core message all the time. And that's with me. So people are like, how do you get so much done? I have a really good planner. I watch who I spend my time with. And I watch what I spend my time on.
That is absolutely so vital. And I was creating a video that was not specifically on time, but it's just that purpose. You know, how do you, if it's not aligned with your values, then you really...
Yeah, and so you remember how I said back earlier in the interview about I'd lost my purpose in life? Mm-hmm. I thought my purpose in life was to contribute to society by paying taxes. All right, that's, you know, as a working mom, that's what I was doing. I was contributing back. That was my purpose. And then it was to make other people smile when they saw my artwork. My purpose now is through my story, sharing my stories to give other people hope that they can improve their lives, they can live a better life, they can get through the adversity that they're facing now, and that it won't happen overnight.
Mm.
It does take time. It takes time to build resilience, but you can build the strategies in place that for the next adversity that you're facing, that you can get through it a lot quicker and a lot smoother.
Yeah, most definitely, and it is. And that's a great word, hope, giving people hope. It's... Yep. An amazing purpose. Justine, as we wrap up, we usually have three takeaways that people, and I know there's been so much discussion on the whole range of topics, but if you want someone to take away, what would be the most important?
Don't give up hope.
Yeah. Yeah.
And to reach out and ask for help.
Mm.
That's not a sign of weakness, it's a sign of strength. And that there are people out there like me as a resilience coach that can help.
Yeah. How can people get in touch with you?
They can Google Justine Martin Geelong and I come up everywhere. JustineMartin.com.au, ResilienceMindset.com.au, MorpheusPublishing.com.au, JustArt.com.au. Yeah, I'm all over socials. If you're on Facebook, just put in Justine Martin, Queen of Resilience. I'll pop up there as well. I'm on TikTok. I've got 11 social media platforms. You'll find me somewhere. But generally, if you just put in Google Justine Martin Geelong, mm-hmm. That's the easiest way to find me.
Excellent. And 11 social media platforms. I have to ask, do you have assistance to
oh, yeah. It's like...
Yeah.
You can't, remember what I said? You can't get anywhere in life without asking for help.
Absolutely.
I now have a full team behind me. Justine Martin Corporation is not just me. There's a whole team that help. And that's another thing, like when you are building, if you're building a business, and especially as an entrepreneur, you can't do everything yourself. You can't work in the business on everything yourself. You've got to outsource. And because I have an acquired brain injury, there's some things I can no longer do.
Mm.
And so that's not a sign of weakness. It's just say, okay, that's my new normal. I can't do that now, but I can outsource for someone else to do it.
Yeah, brilliant. I've absolutely loved our conversation. And I'm sure that you are living your exact purpose, not just to entertain as with your beautiful artwork and to bring smiles, but to give hope to people. Well done, you.
Thank you.
And that's another episode of the We Are Women podcast. Let me know in what you found out of this podcast that you've enjoyed when you comment, either on YouTube or on your favorite listening station. Also, if there's anything that you think that you need assistance with, then jump on JeaneVosper.com, book a strategy call. And I guarantee if I can't be the best person that can support you in that, then I can put you on to people like Justine who will be able to help you achieve the results that you want in your life and in your business. We look forward to you joining me on the next episode. Bye-bye for now.
So, do you feel stuck in a rut in business? Visit speechperfect.com.au and download Janine's free ebook to avoid the 5 most common stumbling blocks women face in business. It's jam-packed full of tips to overcome the barriers that could be holding you back from the success that you dream your business will be. We would love you to leave a review of today's episode and share this podcast with other women in need of entrepreneurial inspiration. Subscribe to the next episode now and join the We Are Women community.